kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. How are you doing?
I'm alive!
Yay! So well, I'm am doing I.
Fine. Yeah. It's snowing.
It's snowing?
It's snowing, yeah. It's been snowing for like 2.5 days now.
Huh.
And we have about 2 inches of snow.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'll be damned.
How do you have 2 inches of snow with that long if it's been snowing for 2 days?
The ground was too warm for it to initially stick. And then it's just like it, like day before yesterday. What day of the week is it? Fuck, Tuesday, Saturday going into Sunday, it was like 80 degrees. And then a cold front blew in and it rained for a couple of hours. And it went from like 60 that night down to 30 the next morning. And then it's been in the 20s since that night. So, Monday morning into Monday night, it's been in the 20s ever since. And man, it's just been like it sleeted for a little while, and then it started snowing. Then we had a snow rain mix for a little while, and then it went back to snow. And then it's just kind of like spit snow all day today.
I hate the mix. Like, I'm fine with snow. Bring on like a foot of snow. Just don't give me a quarter inch of ice. Because that sucks so bad.
We get ice real bad here. Because we're far enough south that it keeps it warm enough to get that burst of rain that turns to ice. And then we get the snow on top of that. So, like, it takes its time. And we get hit with ice storms all the time. And they're miserable.
Ice takes time.
Every time I said it, I was like, this is going to come back at any time now.
I'm going to keep that. I don't want any snow. I hate ice, but keep the damn snow for sure.
What was funny was my kids went out and built little snowmen, but there wasn't enough snow to build like actual snowmen. So they came in and got baby carrots for the noses because they were so small.
That's adorable.
I was like, I give you 5 points for creativity.
Don't go nuts giving them too much credit. I mean, they got to learn.
My yard is just full of little tiny snowman army with little baby carrot noses. I said, you're going to like look out tonight and Dean's just going to be walking around nibbling noses.
God. So anyway, it's a party cast. Purnell's here. Chris is here. How are you two doing?
I'm just perusing the eShop doing that thing I do. I swear it's an addiction. I don't even know why I do this.
I did it earlier. Actually, I did buy Salt and Sanctuary, which has been on my wish list for like a year now.
Oh,
that's a good game, but it's hard. Yeah.
It never goes on sale, but this time it actually did go on sale down to $8.99. And before the pandemic thing this year, I actually met the lady who did the art for the game.
Oh, cool.
And because she's a mutual with one of my friends. And so I was like, I really need to buy that game. And I guess we're not good enough friends because I did buy it at a discount.
Damn.
Hey, this money's tight. Shoot, this is the crazy age. You know, money like that.
I can't honestly say that about myself, though, because I buy so many games.
But you
that's
buy
what
them.
It is. Is that I buy so many games that I have to look for the discounts just so I can jam them all in.
Well, I mean, it doesn't hurt that. I mean, the culture itself kind of provides incentive to that with the whole race for the bottom thing. So, yeah. I mean, really.
I've seen quite a few posts lately about that on Twitter from devs talking about the eShop and like basically how the only way to get noticed on there is to cut your game down to like a penny.
I'll be honest, though. Maybe it's just because, you know, the usual Christmas season, but I feel like it happened even, like, this Christmas season in an unexpected, like, just on physical media, too. Like, I mean, I was all happy about my buy two, get one sale at the beginning of, like, November. Maybe, yeah, I think at the second week of November. And pretty much every game I got in that sale, two of which, actually, I'm sorry, all three of them came out in November. They all have gone to like $30 to $40 on their own in the last 2 weeks. Like I said, it might well just be Christmassy stuff, and like in a month it won't be that price line anymore. But nonetheless,
what games?
I remember, let me see, the Yakuza Like a Dragon. My friend was like, "I got it for $35." I'm like, "The hell! I just paid $40 for it." let me see, the Watch Dogs Legion, which we talked about, but I was too lazy to take that one back.
Yeah.
And then the last one was Crash 4. So Crash 4 came out in October, but still. I mean, they all came out, like, pretty much as holiday releases. And they all just, like, went sub-tank price line that fast. And I think back on, like, my childhood Black Fridays and stuff like that, and, like, the ads for them, I do not remember games dropping like that for Black Friday. Like, they were still like, "Hey, these are the holiday games. We will have them. That's your fucking sale. Come buy it." It won't be sold out, you know, and people are fighting to get games damn near retail cost.
Yeah, I think there's like, it is like, just to go to the point of, you know, getting noticed in the eShop, it really is kind of like either your game is like, you know, digitally like over $20 and it's like an indie darling that nobody will like stop talking about. Like right now, that's Hades.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or you're just like, yeah, you have to like, as they say, race for the bottom kind of thing. But it is interesting how certain games, like, as long as they're expensive enough and, like, enough people like them and talk about them, then, you know, those sell really well, too, and get a whole lot of attention. So,
yeah, it doesn't make sense. I am sad it's starting to look like that race to the bottom mentality might be breaking into Xbox. I noticed ever since the store updated, some of the games from the community collection or the creators collection, whatever the hell it is, have been leaking into the main storefront. And with that comes games that are clearly mobile phone ripoffs that are priced at 99 cents down from $35.99 or some bullshit like that.
Yeah.
And that makes it harder to find games that, you know, deserve the spotlight.
Yeah.
Literally,
I don't know
people
why.
Are just like, this game's cheap, why the fuck not, you know?
Yeah, and then they get suckered into a garbage game that Arnid's saying, yeah, they don't even have achievement. Of course he cares about that.
Yeah, twice. I was just going to say, twice this week, there were so many games on sale, quote-unquote, that I literally couldn't get to the bottom of the eShop. Like, jeez. Even if I put it in list form, like, by pushing the filter button, it's, like, eventually it just stops loading, and, you know.
Is that what's
just
going on? I've noticed that, too. Like, I'm like, I'm sure I didn't scroll by 1,000 games. What happened?
Yeah.
The eShop, like, just gave up.
Yeah, so, like, I've taken to, like, searching each of the price points, like, out of curiosity, but I'm still not seeing everything that's on sale. And, yeah, you know.
Yeah, I get that. I'm sure there's people listening to this right now that might be like, well, why the heck would you, like, what kind of freaking, like, rich bastard are you to be complaining about games being cheap? And it's not really about, go ahead.
Oh, no, you're making a point. I don't want to interrupt you.
No, I think we're on the same page, so I want to hear what you have to say. Save me the oxygen.
It's merely to me that the eShop lacks the infrastructure needed to support this crap. Yes. For instance, they will not delist any games that you've already purchased. Even though you cannot look at the price, you can only look at the sales page, and like, you could do that from the game's app, like, you know, by pushing start on it in the menu. But like, if it's there in the eShop and you've already purchased it, you can't see the price. You can only just pull up the page. So why list it with everything else? If you're somebody like me and you own 700 Switch games digitally alone, like, you don't need to see and you bought most of them on sale, you don't need to see like 700 grayed out entries on a 1400 title sales page.
I concur.
They could do that, like, on all storefronts, though, because it's the same way on Xbox and PlayStation, where I can load up the latest Xbox Black Friday sales, and I'm just going through pages and pages of everything saying owned.
Yeah, and like they have filters, so they have the ability to filter out certain titles based on certain variables. Just make one of those variables, you know, take out what I've already bought.
Yeah,
that'd be so handy. Yeah, mm-hmm. That would be really, and it's things like, you know, and again, it's the fact that they have 1,400 things and like in, you know, look at on sale, and then there's no way to load them all to even look at them. Like if you check it obsessively, like some people, not including me, because I would never do that. Would never have done that at 7 o'clock this evening.
Oh, yeah. You.
Oh, me.
So, yeah, this has the potential to be a really short episode. Are you guys
excited? Yeah, right.
No,
children.
I'm for reals. We only have 4 games to talk about tonight.
Heck yeah.
It's a Festivus miracle.
Should we jump into these? Get this shit over and done with?
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Star Renegades, developed by Massive Damage, published by Raw Fury, released November 19th on Xbox One and Switch for $24.99. Also available as part of Xbox Game Pass. Star Renegades is a dimension-spanning roguelite strategy RPG. Outsmart uniquely generated adversaries, forge bonds between heroes, and end the cycle. Brunel, tell us about Star Renegades.
Well, I wanted to mention the main character of the game, but honestly, after like the first loop, you kind of realize that she may not even be a main character, just a way to set the game up. But basically, the way this game works is you control a team of renegades from the stars. This is what I'll say. And the idea is that there is an alien force that is taking over your world. And for gameplay narrative purposes, they are multidimensional. So they're not just going to take over one universe. They're going to take over every universe in every form. So the idea is that your main character is actually not a human. It's a little robot thing. And the idea is that this robot can travel between the dimensions, and it will go to a dimension and meet the crew of the actual space unit that you're working with. And that space crew will go through the game, and I'll explain the game itself shortly, but they'll go through the game as best they can. And in the event that you fail and you lose the game, the robot goes to another dimension to do it all over again. Hopefully that time being the one that succeeds. It's almost like Quantum Leap. But the way the actual game flow works is at the beginning of each run, you get to choose between 3 different units. Well, I guess at the beginning of the game, they actually do give you kind of a starter character named like Wynn. And she's running to like a very base narrative where she joins up with 2 game characters that I'm not sure if they give them to you by default or if they're randomized. But you start with her and 2 other characters. And the area layout goes as follows. You know, you play Slay the Spire, and that game is based around nodes or that Escape from Eden game, and it's like a bunch of nodes that connect, and each one has like an event of some sort. Well, this game gives you a sort of top-down, like RPG world-looking view, so you can move your characters around and walk around and inspect stuff, but really, it's the same concept of nodes. You'll go onto a map, and you will be able to see the entire universe for that stage, and the goal is to get to a particular objective that's on the map. The robot, Justin, the one I mentioned that can interplanetary hop, he is able to break gates. Gates are the things that keep you from going just from node to node willy-nilly. He can break 3 nodes a day in game time. And at the end of a day, you have to rest. But what does it entail when you break nodes? Well, every node has one or more of a few things. An environmental hazard, such as like maybe like an enemy that will attack you immediately. Treasure chests that can contain money. DNA, which is how you level up in the game, or a chest that can contain a weapon or armor that runs in the various levels of tiers, like normal, epic, or common, or normal, epic, or rare. And then lastly, adversaries. So the adversaries in this game are a little different from like what you'd expect from a lot of other games like this. So there are some mobs, like typical enemies, but there are also enemies that are generated by the game that are like generals and colonels within like the alien army. And they come with their own like stats and perks and stuff, which you can actually read about them in like a specific screen that lets you view all the enemy army characters that have been revealed thus far. And when you fight them, you have to try to beat them. But if they last too long, they will run away. If they run away, they actually level up and become stronger when they come back to fight you later on in the same game. So how does combat work, though? Combat in this game is probably, in my opinion, the game's best feature. If you've ever played Grandia back in the day, old game, this game brings back the concept of like a real-time bar with interrupt attacks. So every character in the game can learn a variety of different attacks, whether it be, you know, damaging attacks or supports. But the attacks come in a variety of ways, of types. You have light, normal, flurry, and heavies. And these all come with their own base stats. I'm not going to go on the craziness because there's a lot that goes in this game. In fact, it took me a little bit to get used to it because of all the numbers you had to read and stuff. But it does become easy to understand eventually, and then it flows like one. There is a 60-second time gauge that comes up at the beginning of every battle, or in the beginning of every round. And every attack you have comes with its own amount of time it takes to execute. And same with the enemies. So an enemy that goes before you do will always crit you. And crits suck in this game. Like, they really fucking hurt. But if you go before them, the same thing happens to them. You hit them with a crit. And that's fantastic, because if you do nail a crit, same going for the enemies again, you get extra perks to the attack. Like, you might get armor breaking or shields breaking damage. Sometimes you might even like hit them with a status element. And the most beautiful thing about this whole battle system is not just the whole critting thing if you hit first, but also every enemy has a number next to their bar or next to their icon on the time gauge. That number indicates how many times you can kick them back in the turn order by hitting them with an attack that does turn order delay. And if you hit them with enough time delays, you can knock them off the board and take their entire turn away for that ramp, which is freaking awesome, because there will be times where you'll see a set of guys about to attack and they are going to wreck your face if they get all their attacks off. You're like, okay, I got to stop and look through these options and determine what is the best course of action to prevent the most heavy hitting guy from even getting his turn, maybe stunning another guy, so on and so forth. And you're going to be doing this a lot. That most of the game is strategizing your best possible options to knock guys back, get crits off, and just steal their turns. And of course, you can't just do it indefinitely, because once that number hits zero, they are pretty much guaranteed to get an attack off no matter what you do, short of maybe stunning them. So it's not like a mechanic that lets you just get by playing the game scot-free without damage. You will still get your ass wrecked. It's just you have a fighting chance now. At the end of each battle, you can get money or DNA, which again lets you level up your character. And leveling up your character allows you to increase your shields, which is the damage you take before your hit points take damage. And it is also a way to learn new skills. Every time you level up, you have the potential to learn a new skill, whether it is a attack that you can use in combat or a card. Cards are an interesting little mechanic in this game, too. Because remember how I mentioned earlier that you get three shield breaks for every day in the game?
Mm-hmm.
After each day, the game takes you to like a sort of a campsite or whatever. Now, keep in mind, I should mention this too. You have a total of 3 days to reach the objective on each state. So you can't just like use this system that I'm about to describe, you know, indefinitely either. Now, at the end of each day, your team camps out. And at the campsite, you are pretty much kind of hanging out, just like eating s'mores or whatever the hell people do at campfires. And you have your shields, which are already full pretty much, and your hit points, which likely are not, because you do not get health back during your actual runs and stages. Only your shields regenerate after battles. So while you're at the campsite, each character has certain cards in their inventory that are attributed specifically to them. And then other cards can be found in some of the nodes, like food cards, which are one-time use cards. And what you do with these is a character can spend a recreation point, which you have a 5 per campfire, to use a card on themselves or another character in the campsite. If you use the card, it can give you any number of perks, like, you know, increased shields. It'll heal your character for like 30 to 50% of their hit points wherever you got there. You might get something that says lets you siphon hit points or shield damage per attack for two combats. And stuff like that. So basically that means 2 out of the 3 nodes will give you these cool perks in battle, which is pretty powerful when you really think about it. And then the last thing that these cards do, aside from just using them for the perks, is each one comes with an affection meter. And every time you use a card on a person that is not yourself, you will build affection for that person. And eventually, if you get to certain thresholds, those two characters will have a conversation event, and you unlock a perk, such as, like, you know, increased health and shields, or a team-up combo attack, or, I don't know, like, even better perks. Like, it's really worth it to you to get these relationships built up in a session, despite the fact that, well, I'll get to that shortly.
I just want to say I'm glad you pointed out that it was affection, because I thought you said infection.
Oh, no, that would be glorious.
And that's significantly different than affection.
Well, maybe in some weird respect, it is infection, because while it is great to see these characters bond and get these cool combo attacks and see the perks build up, it just makes it hurt that much more when you eventually get your face wrecked and your entire team gets killed off and ain't a damn thing you can do about it. And I'm going to tell you right now, when it happened to me, I was livid. Like, I was like a good 3 hours in too. So these aren't like short node runs. This isn't like a freaking Slay the Spire run. I was in like a good 3 hours for my first wreck. And I thought I was on a hot streak. I was like, maybe I can beat this game without dying. This will be great. And I got to a boss. And the way this boss worked is worth describing, because this gives you a good impression of how this game plays. He had some attacks where, like, the first round, he was going to hit everybody. So I'm like, shit, this guy's going to not only hit everybody, but it also shows you how much damage he's going to do to you if you don't do anything. And the damage was insane. So I'm like, okay, there's got to be something I could do. I can't just, like, lose right now. I fought to get here. So I'm like, knocking his turns off. I was debuffing him. I had him bleeding and irradiated and all this stuff. And then after I pushed him back to the point where he couldn't get, you know, knocked off the time gauge anymore, I was like, okay, he's going to hit my main character for a ton of damage. I can buffer shields and buffer defense, but what else can I do? I have a guy that will immediately knock him off the grid regardless of his status. I'll use him to do that. And when I did it, this particular boss had a special perk where if you hit him with that type of attack, he goes rabbit. So for the next three turns, he got four attacks. It was bullshit. He fucked us up. I tried to start the game over. The game auto-saves in battle, so you can't do that. It was like there was no stopping the wreckage.
Oh, man.
I fucking died. And the game intends for this to happen. But that doesn't make it go down any smoother when you fucking lose. So anyway, I died. And when you die, you go back to the little robot, retreats back to the main camp, which at this point is doomed to die. Like, everyone there is expecting to die. So you can, like, go to the bar and talk to any characters that you didn't have in your party at the time and just watch them talk about how their lives are fucked. You can spend points that you earn, because when you defeat colonels and, like, generals and bosses in combat with in the main game, you earn credits, which can be used to buy gear, which can be used in subsequent runs, whether it allows you to find it in treasure chests, or you can even take one item back with you to equip on one of your new heroes. So once you've done all this, you get into a ship, you go back into another alternate, you know, parallel universe, and you can recruit three new people. Now, there's the three people that you started the game with. After every saved, every completed planet, you can recruit new people sometimes. The game will offer them to you randomly. But when you die on a run, you can sometimes spend tech credits to buy new recruitable units. So when you go back to your new run, you might have a couple new guys that you can suddenly just put in your party now instead of the three guys you started with. And they all come with their own styles of combat and play. I couldn't give up my cool, like, you know, turn killing guy despite being a spongy jerk, because turn cancels are fucking important in this game. So, but you end up going through it again, and you also unlock just general perks based on how well you did on the previous run, which is why you don't just, like, die an hour in. You still press forward and defeat as much as you can before you lose. But the further you get in, the more you take out, the more perks you'll unlock for your subsequent runs. And the perks, again, are also very important, because that's likely the stuff coupled with new items and such that will be what make the difference between you succeeding or failing and succeeding on the subsequent run. So downside to that, of course, is, like, this is a new universe, which means all those relationships you built are gone. You have to reestablish those at the campsites. It feels regressive, like, crap,
I gotta do all that again? Crap. These guys were friends. They were lovers in the other timeline. They don't even know who each other are. But I can do 20 plus tech damage. That's cool, right? You know. So it's like there's a weird feeling that you get there. In that on one hand, I guess it's technically a roguelike in that regard, in that you're meant to die and repeat until you get it right. Eat your heart out, freaking like Tom Cruise. But by the same token, the downside to it, of course, is that it's not each run is not a short romp. So the losses still freaking suck when you just can't make it. And having to redo some of the relationships again, it's kind of rough, too. But I think personally, the fun outweighs that element. Like, I enjoyed having a solid run, feeling my guys were powerhouse badasses. And even better is when you do come across battles that you think you're going to lose, but you're like, no, because you spend so much time trying. You're like, I'm not going to just throw this shit. There's got to be a way. And you get desperate and you start trying stuff that you probably wouldn't have done before. And there was at least one battle before the guy that killed me where that exactly is what happened. I thought I was going to lose. I was like, no, that's not, that can't be possible. There's got to be a way out of this. And I figured it out and I beat the asshole. Didn't even let his ass retreat. Screw letting bosses retreat. They don't deserve that luxury. Screw them. but it ended up being a lot of fun. I think the game is a lot of fun. I am not disappointed. And especially considering that I was interested in this since I saw the original trailer get released, or the intro movie get released on like Twitter. I was not disappointed at all. This game is solid. Just know that if you come into it knowing that you might spend 3-4 hours on a run, luck and die, and then do it again with a new planetary loadout generated, and you'll still have fun trying. Like, it's just that kind of game.
Well, then $24.99, what do you think of Star Renegades?
I'd call it a solid buy. I am not disappointed at all.
Cool, and if people are concerned, again, it is on Game Pass. So, fucking play it.
Get it.
All right, next game is Brawl Chess, developed and published by Red Deer Games, released November 19th on Xbox One and Switch for $9.99. Are you ready to become a champion? Choose your hero and challenge other players in this family-friendly game with a lively cartoon style. Train your brain and bond with your loved ones at the same time. Chris, tell us about Brawl Chess.
Okay, I'm going to try to keep this short. No, just kidding. Spoilers, it is extremely short. So Brawl Chess is a continuation of actually a game that I really enjoyed on the PC and NES back in the day called Battle Chess, which was the exact game of chess, except that the characters were actually drawn like cartoon, like, you know, knights and pawns and queen and stuff, and they would do like attack animations and things like that. And even had a pretty really it had a really funny like tutorial that taught you how to play chess. And I don't know, I also had a chess game on a floppy disk where you like it was just squares with the letter that it represents, like K for king and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't directly control it. You had to like actually type the coordinates into DOS.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So video game chess and me go way back. So this one kind of takes that, that battle chess step of being just chess with a personality. But that's all it does. It's just a chess game. Like, you either choose one player or two players. Two players, I think by default, are on the same Switch. Like, with, you know, if you have it in handheld mode and you choose two players, like, the handheld mode controls both players. And you get two choices for your, well, it doesn't really seem to specify, like, I guess, yeah, there's a white side and a black side, you know, and by default, that's player one and player two. I don't think it flips form or anything like that. So player one always starts first, I guess. And player one has two options, a princess or a prince. And then player two has three options. It includes robot, which is, you know, always the third option in the monarchy. And then there's about five styles of characters on each side that are locked behind DLC. I think $3 gets you the whole set. Or they're like $1 a piece.
Yeah, $1 each or $3 for all five. That is correct.
Yeah. And yeah, then you choose, like I said, either one player, two players. And in the options menu, it's you can either have the cartoony looking like chess pieces, like I said, you know, knights that are really knights, and you know, the bishops actually look like warriors to me. I don't know. But you know, they're very clear on what they are, and like when you highlight them, it shows all the moves that you can make, which is really cool. It doesn't have anything like, you know, a suggestion mode or anything like that. I know a lot of chess games tend to have that, but this one doesn't really have any kind of options like that. But it does have, and you know, you can also switch it to be just like standard pieces. You can also choose from 15 languages, which is, you know, pretty impressive, except that it only just changes the language in the menu because there's no words in the actual game.
Yeah, it's chess.
Yeah, exactly. And literally, that's all I can say about it. As soon as you win a game or lose a game, then you go back to the option. Oh, there's 5 difficulty levels, which is pretty cool. The very easy mode is, I would say, family-friendly, beginner-friendly, because I could actually win it pretty much every time. It's just like every now and then the computer makes an extremely dumb mistake, which, they, you know, my floppy disk DOS game from back in the day, like, hardly ever made mistakes. So I had to get really good to beat it because there was only one difficulty level, and that was, you know, Fisher King or whatever. So, yeah, that's it. I mean, it's a chess game. Like when you win or lose, it just takes you back to the same menu and just repeat until you're done with it.
Yeah, I do wish there was more to this game. That's just what I kept finding myself saying, no matter what aspect of the game it was. I wish there was more to it. I wish there were more characters that you could pick from. I think it kind of sucks that there's only really 2 characters, either the prince or the princess, and then the others you have to pay to unlock. I think it would have been better to just make it a $12.99 game instead of $9.99 and include them.
Yeah, I feel like there should have been some more stuff added, like even mechanically, you know, for one thing, Battle Chess. And again, Battle Chess is from like 1989 or 1990 or something like that. It had, like I said, a fully voiced like tutorial on how to play chess, which is really cool. And I still remember like that to this day. And like, you know, it had attack animations like in this one. It just, you know, the 2 enemies face off and it's just a cloud, like, you know, a cartoon violence cloud. Yeah. And then it's kind of generic in that way, you know.
And then I was kind of hoping, what was the old NES game, Archon, where the chess pieces actually fought each other? I was kind of hoping.
Yeah, that was Battle Chess as well. Yeah. Well, I guess
where you actually got to control the fight.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's Archon. I thought. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was hoping we might see something along those lines and have actual interactive fights instead of just standard chess rules. But I can understand why they wanted to stick with classic chess. And they do have the classic chess piece designs in there as well, if you want to keep it more traditional.
Yeah, it's really that kind of thing. Like, you know, they have a game on the Switch called Just Blackjack, and that's really what it is. It's what is written on the box is that you just play a game of blackjack if you want to.
Yeah.
So I think calling it Brawl Chess kind of maybe set up some expectations that weren't quite met.
Yeah. But overall, $10, what do you think?
I think $10, kind of a tall order, unless you're really hurting for some chess content being delivered in a, you know, animated, fun sort of way. I mean, if you really, you know, obviously this is a system that has Chess Ultra on it. And as I said in my review for that game, that is like, you couldn't get any more chess than that. But of course, it's not silly. It's purely like, it's chess, like that a chess obsessed person would like go gaga over. This is just a fun little game to, you know, just to pop in and be like, hey, you want to play a quick game of Brawl Chess and then switch it to 2-player with the same Switch. And I imagine that's a scenario that could happen. I mean, if that sounds like that's for you, then $10, I'd call it a buy it, because again, it does what it says on the tin. Anything else, I would say try it, maybe explore some other options. If you're really looking for a deep chess experience, it's not in this game, it's in Chess Ultra.
Yeah. this is like the Chess Horizon to the Chess Motorsport.
There you go. There you go.
This is the fun and fancy free version. But next game, we are going to revisit Paw Paw Paw, developed by Simpleton, published by Rattalaika Games on console and Grab the Games. Released December 1st on PS4, 2nd on Xbox, 4th on the Switch for $9.99. Paw 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 was a peaceful and prosperous kingdom until one fateful day when the king had decided to enforce everyone to wear pants. You play as part of the resistance group Anti-Pants in their effort to bring down the king, hack and slash your way to victory, and beat all your enemies into pulps. Cole, tell us about your time with Paw Paw Paw.
Listen, when you tell me you're giving me a Rattalaika game, I have expectations, okay? My expectations are that, one, it's going to take me about 15 minutes, an hour at most. Two, it's going to be easy. Three, I'm going to come in here and pretend like I put more effort into it than I really did. I was lied to this week. This is not easy. Oh. This took way more than 15 minutes.
Rattalaika is trying to change their spots.
Fucking hard. Somebody needs to send Rattalaika an email and remind them of what they're here for. This ain't it.
We're better than that. Don't pigeonhole us. We're Rattalaika.
You need to stay in your lane, Rattalaika.
Oh, God. It is good that they are branching out and doing more involved and interactive games.
And I will say, this is a really good one to do that with. But it's fucking hard. And I wasn't prepared for how hard it was. Chris is going to be like, I didn't think it was that hard. And I don't give a fuck. My hands hurt. And this shit's hard.
Carnage is saying that they're apparently patching in the easier difficulty that's present in the Steam version.
For the love of all that fucks, I'm just going to stop and wait. Nobody has completed it, and I don't know if there are two glitched achievements or if just nobody can beat it. I don't know what it is. I can tell you what, I can't get past this fucking part where I got to protect the tank, and I'm about ready to throw something.
Oh, the tank. I did mention the tank in my review.
So mad. I'm so mad. It definitely feels like this game is meant to be played with four people. And it's a good thing in a way because it can play with four people and that's great. It's suited for a multiplayer game. It's a 2D beat 'em up. We went through all this last week. Go listen to Chris. He's better at that shit than I am.
He's got dugs.
Yeah. They don't want to wear pants. They're animals. They don't want to wear pants. So instead, they're going to armor up with chest plates and big bony axes and beat the snot out of each other. You can't decide how much gore it gives you, which is good when the kids are playing with me because I can turn that shit down. And when they go to bed, I can play by myself and I can turn that shit back up and I get to watch myself decapitate the little bunnies. It's kind of funny.
I turned it off in total because I was like, eh.
It's so gory. Like, the game is so adorable.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that appeals to certain people that aren't me. That's like, I don't know.
I like that kind of shit.
Yeah, it's either older or younger than I am.
It's adorable. Yes. Agorable. Awful, but yes. I was so surprised, like, when I started playing it, and I thought, okay, there's a gore button. And then I thought, how bad could this really be? Yeah, you just straight up off with their head type shit. It's wonderful, but if you're playing with kids, turn it off. Or if there's kids in the room, then you don't want the gore. And I appreciate that they put that in there. I definitely want them to put it in easy mode, though. It would greatly benefit. It does feel like, where I said it feels like everything is meant to be played with four people, it doesn't scale appropriately if you're playing by yourself. And that's my biggest gripe about it. Of course, if they patch it in easy mode, then that's kind of moot, isn't it? But in its current state, like, it's really frustrating. I found myself having to go back a lot to previous levels to just grind for money and experience points so that I could level myself up a little bit to get a little further. I think I've got four levels left before I beat it because I'm fucking determined over here for whatever reason. I got four levels left to go. And even still, I'm just like, I'm going all the way back to the beginning just to run through some levels and get some shit. And even as maxed out as I fucking am at my current state, there are still some of the levels where I'm not entirely sure how we beat them in the first place. In the earlier, I think I clearly just got lucky when I was playing those.
Did you run into any secret bosses?
I did. I ran into the root one. Early on, if you beat the shit out of all the trees, then you get a boss who like gets a hidden boss who gets pissed off at you for doing it. And then I got another one.
Oh,
I think
he wrecked me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I got him down to like halfway, but I haven't beat him. And I think there was another one. I think it was for destroying the mail packages on the train. Because I only got him to pop up once and I beat him. And then I've never seen him again and haven't been able to trigger him again. But yeah, it's so hard. But it's really well done. The art's really good. The fighting is I think it's balanced enough when you're properly leveled. But if you're playing alone, getting properly leveled takes a lot of effort, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But they don't want you to play it alone. And there's a lot of things that will make it unfair for you when you are solo. Because you can only choose like one specific class, obviously you're one person. So one of the things I kept having a lot of problems with early on was the weapon drops would be for every other class but the one I was trying to use. And then when I would get something for the class I was trying to use, it would say, your weapon tier isn't high enough for this. And I'm like, how the fuck am I supposed to get enough skill points to unlock anything if you won't give me anything to let me progress? it was the snake eating its own tail. It was just round and round and round. There's so much good, but man, that gameplay really makes it tough. But yeah, I would come back and visit again if they do patch in an easy mode. I think it would make a big difference.
Well, as it stands now at $10, what do you think of this one?
At $10, I think it justifies a try it, but it's really hard. Like, I'd like to give it that buy it because I feel like there's a lot there that's earned it. But there's the difficulty spike and the fact that if you're playing by yourself, it's really not suited for you, kind of makes it harder to sell it at that rate, right? So I think that it's most fair at a try it. And then if they patch it, then we can look back at it again for a third time.
Sounds good. All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called Hide and Dance, developed and published by Hap Inc., promoted via Kemco, released November 19th on the PS4 for $4.99. Press the buttons to the rhythm of the music, dance, and make combos. Be careful not to be spotted by your mom entering the room. Ernell, tell us about Hide and Dance.
Trying to make up for that long review earlier. Hide and Dance is exactly as it sounds. You choose a character. You choose a song. Throughout the song, buttons will come down the screen from the back to the front, and when they overlay the screen on the location for their button placement, you have to hit that button to get, you know, rhythmic timing and allow your character to continue to dance. However, during the song, at various intervals, the door that is behind you will open, revealing your mother, or when you unlock the mother, the grandfather, who will stop and wonder, what are you doing in here? And you better not be dancing, because clearly that's the only thing they have an issue with, because when you press the trigger buttons to stop dancing, the different animations they have are freaking hilarious. Like, sometimes they'll be like climbing a rope. One time the guy was like hiding in the back of a lamp. There's like just so many funny things that each character has as an animation or display for when they're trying to not be seen dancing. And then once they close the door, you get back to dancing and you maintain the rhythm and beat the song. Songs are generally fairly short in this game. We're talking like 2 minutes at the most. So it's not so bad when you get caught and your entire playthrough is canceled. But at the same time, you want to succeed, so don't get caught. During your play session, when the notes are scrolling down, you have a few different types of notes. Just a basic note, which you just hit it and you get the notes rating. There are some notes where there's like a line that connects them, which means hit the button, both buttons at the same time. And there are also times where a coin will fall down, in which case they're not rated for, you know, in the form of like perfect, good, or bad, or whatever. It's just if you hit that note at any, you know, rhythmic timing, you'll get money. And after every song, you'll also get money based on how well you did and how long your max combo was. You take that money to an external pachinko machine. You pay 10 coins per pull, and you can get either a new song to play, a new character to play, or I don't even remember what the other thing was. It was something unimportant, though. I remember that because I just remember being like, I don't care about that. I want more songs. But essentially, you'll do that. And it's not, you know, particularly bad timing or anything. I mean, you ultimately will just play songs, and you'll unlock stuff at a steady pace for the most part. But you can also kind of stockpile some money in order to pay for two more expensive things, which are to like give you the option to increase the note speed or decrease the note speed. And you can also turn on the option to turn off the family member. But why the hell would you do that? That's the whole point of the game. So I don't know who's going to spend 300 coins to turn off, you know, your peeping parents. But that's on them. So
for the people who just want the rhythm game.
No, the game is about peeping parents. And the only thing about that, till you mentioned the rhythm part, is that maybe it was just me, but I felt like the rhythm wasn't even particularly one-to-one on like the notes. So like there were some songs where I was like trying to be on the rhythm to it, and then eventually I was like, you know what, you can't do that 100%. Just like watch for the timing and nail it. So it's not even 100% that. So I feel like taking the family away takes the game's charm away. You want to do the whole dodge the family and get the wackiness going on there. But with that said, even with the weird timing issues that I was having, I was still able to score well. I was still able to have fun playing it on all three difficulties for the songs I was choosing. It didn't break the game or anything. It just means that I didn't really treat it like a real deal rhythm game because of that missed beat here and there. But it was still fun. I liked the music to it. There were a couple of really silly songs where I was like, I gotta play that again. Like, there's one song like Neko Cat Chaser or something weird like that. I was like, this is a good song. It shouldn't be this good. And I played it multiple times. I unlocked every difficulty and then played on the extreme difficulty like three times in a row. So, like, the music is good. The theme is good. I even like the art style to it. It's not like in the right home about, but it's entertaining. It's wacky, and it does its job. I would go so far to say this is definitely worth, especially because of the price point. I almost want to call it, you know, fuck it, why not? I kind of should, just because I like saying that. But in a sense, I would genuinely, you know what, screw it. It would be a buy, but fuck it, why not? It's an option because it's cheap enough. So I'm going to use it. So let's do the thing.
Cool. $5, your official verdict.
Oh, fuck it, why not? You should buy it.
Buy it again. So it's cheap enough. Just buy it. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Hey, never thought I'd say this early in the show, but that's it for this episode.
What?
Call it a holiday miracle.
Under an hour. Hot damn.
Never it's before. A
Christmas miracle.
It is a Christmas miracle.
December 1st or whatever this releases.
Well, the timing is also miraculous.
Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
I'm good. Just drink tea, get your hot cocoa on. It's hot cocoa and soup season, so don't let it go to waste.
Hot cocoa.
Damn right. Get some as soon as this is over. Cocoa.